I'm Brian.
And I'm Reggie.
And this is R&B Talks.
Indeed it is.
Back again, Reg.
Back again.
I know. Good week. Full of excitement and wonderment.
Yeah, we had, last week, the girls were at their camp thing, like we talked about. And so Friday, though, there was a neighbor that wanted to help me with a problem tree to get cut down. So he came over on Friday, and we spent half the day trying to get that thing down. It was stuck. That was fun.
I think you cut it down just so you could chop more wood.
No.
I think you were like,
I don't want to cut. Okay.
Have you gotten to that point where you're like addicted and you're like, I'm just going to cut down all my trees and chop them up because it's that much fun?
I'm there, but I've restrained that. I still have plenty to split, so I'm not really worried about it. But no, I mean, it was just I broke my rigging rope and a couple other things, and I'm trying to figure out how I can replace all that stuff. And it's like, you know, the amount that things cost right now is
utterly redonkulous.
I was sickened to myself. It was like, how, because there's a problem with pulling it out, pulling the tree. We have to be it leaned toward the road in a way with weight on that side too. So it's not like you really couldn't wedge it over enough to get it to where it would fall the other way. So that means you got to pull it. So that's really not a big deal. I had a rigging rope, I hooked it up, but there was this one daggone limb that was stuck up in the adjacent tree, and it was just preventing that thing from falling. And I couldn't get enough traction in the tractor to pull it down. And I snapped my rigging rope, which I felt really crappy about. But then, the guy I was with had this really old forestry like winch thing that he got, and we hooked it up and pulled it down. But even that took some effort and stuff anyway. But it was like a whole process to get that thing down. But, so now I'm like looking at how to replace some of that stuff. What other things I would need in order to like help? Cause I haven't invested into like some of the pulleys and stuff in order to do like a mechanical advantage and all this kind of stuff. Cause I thought, well, I got a tractor, who really need it, and I haven't so far, but apparently I do have some other trees that are kind of the same thing. So I'm going to have to need it. And, I just don't want to spend like $1,300 to get all this stuff. Cause none of it's small. None of it's cheap. Cause it's all about pulling trees down, which takes big stuff that's heavy duty, that's made really well and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, I'm just like, oh, don't want to do that.
Nobody wants to.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to spend $1,300 on anything.
Yeah. Well,
I would spend $1,300 to get $1,400.
Well, there is some of those things that like, you're like, you're looking forward to buying something or whatever that you're intentional about. That's fun. Cause then you've allocated for it and all that kind of stuff. But when you get like you're like, if you don't have to get it, cause that you don't really have to do these things, but if you don't do those things and you fall behind, anyway, but so yeah, I've just been cutting that up, cleaning it up. And that's it really. And just going about my bad self.
Going about your bad self.
What about you, Brian? What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. You know, working hard, studying, learning, growing. I'm still on that path, man. Still on that path. I just love to listen to things I've never listened to before, learn things I didn't know. Did a lot of that this past week while I was preparing for this. Learned a lot of things Brian didn't know. Brian now has more knowledge, and Brian feels good about it.
I had I turned in a paper on Romans that I had due and all this stuff. And I have a professor that actually grades you get in school, you get these different people, professors that some of them just go, yeah, you met your requirements. Cool. Here's
your grade.
Yeah. But that's not, I don't, care for that too much. I'm not in it really just to get a grade and a degree. I'm in it to do.
Well, you are sort of.
But that's kind of the secondary point, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The primary point is to, you know, and grow the skill set involved with apologetics and stuff, right?
Well, you are an arguer.
Indeed.
You are a debater.
And so I may end up debating the professor on my grade, but that's okay. And I enjoy that. But, you know.
So what grade you get?
84.
Out of 100.
Yeah.
Why did he say you got an 84?
Well, it's interesting, and it's there would be way too much to probably get into here, but the
give me the second grade version.
Yeah, it's just the way academia, like when they want you to do a paper, you got to really be fine point on things, and but you're still not. You're not expressing your opinion. You're concluding things from other people.
Okay.
So the whole papers are really just you researching other people's stuff, putting it in there in a logical order, and then having some kind of conclusion and a thesis that is around those things.
Whilst making a palpable argument.
Yeah. And so when you talk about Romans, like Paul does a great job establishing the case for faith and non-partiality of God's judgment and all that stuff. And he goes through it in Romans really well. So it's like, and there's already been like, you know, hundreds of freaking commentaries on it and other people that, you know, so it's like it, at this point, you're really not, it's really hard to find something that is not just overdone, you know, and he's not looking for any creative thing about that. It's not a doctoral thesis or anything like that, but it's still one of those things where he really, most of it was like, I strayed away from the thesis too much. I did, you know, there was some points where it was like, I didn't do this or didn't do that. You know, that's really what the deductions were all about. There was good feedback for an actual academic paper. My biggest problem about these kind of things is that I probably changed my thesis probably, you know, 5 or 6 times and rewrote a bunch of the paper 2 or 3 times and all that kind of, in order to just find something that worked for what I wanted to do. And
that's, you had to make it Reggie.
Yeah. And I mean, it's at the end of the day, it doesn't, because of the restrictions of how you're writing for academia in this point, it kind of doesn't, it just, I'm just throwing down stuff.
Yeah, well.
You know what I mean? It's like, so I don't really get to express what you want to because you're following their, you know, criteria or whatever. So it gets a little challenging for me. And sometimes I just like blurt it all out and I just like, yeah, fine. Submit it and see what happens. So I'm not disagreeing with anything with the guy, but yeah, it's just that, yeah, that's why.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of throwing things down, Reggie, it's Pride Month.
You know, I've read that somebody said it was something like that.
Yeah, dude. All right. So let me tell you, it's also Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. Now,
like biological men or like men,
men, like me and you men.
We have to qualify that now.
No, we don't. I'm not qualifying anything. If you would have done to the delusion that you are a man and you're really not a man, you don't get any qualification from me.
If your chromosomes aren't such.
Yeah. But this is, you know, and I actually got into this discussion with one of the people that I spend a lot of time with, talk with. And, you know, there's several problems that layer into this that I have an issue with. I am a very big advocate of men's mental health and men's, you know, awareness of men's mental health and where I've done work with veterans and things like that. I find this to be probably the most insulting month on the planet. And here's why. All right. So first of all, I don't want to celebrate anybody's sexuality, period. I don't want anybody to celebrate mine. What I do behind the closed doors with my wife is between my wife and I. No one else. I don't need you to throw a party.
In your OnlyFans page, but
yeah. But I don't have a flag. I don't want you to create a month for me. I don't want you to create a day for me. And part of that reason is when you're celebrate, when you put your identity into your sexuality, you are literally celebrating something that distills you and your movement down to its basest and most juvenile level, period. Right? Like, are you not made of more than that? Do you not have more substance than that? Than where you stick your ding dong and your hoo ha. I don't care. Like, I don't. Like, there's just nothing in me that cares. And we're celebrating this. Wow. I'm going to give you. Okay. So we got guy, lady boy. I don't know what you want to call him, dancing in the street in, thongs and pink tutus and whatever that's going on. We've all seen the parades on television. While we ignore Men's Mental Health Month, and I just want to give you some statistics, and this is something I'm passionate about, so I'm not going to go down this road too deep.
And we've talked about some of this before.
Yeah, because if I do, I'll be on this road forever. All right, so let's break this down. Suicide in men is the biggest killer of men under 50 in the world. Okay? For every successful suicide by men, there are 20 unsuccessful. So that means that if you're in a room with 100 men, 20 have attempted, one has achieved it. That's a huge number, right? Men compromise 75 to 80% of suicides worldwide. We lose approximately 2 men per minute worldwide. That breaks down to 120 an hour, 2,880 a day, 86,400 a month, and that's 1,036,800 yearly men. 20% of men in the U.S. suffer mental illness as opposed to less than 10% in other countries, which I think speaks to volumes about our country at this point. And yet we choose to celebrate something that isn't celebration worthy. Has zero impact on zero positive impact on the majority of the culture, and is mostly just a big look at me party.
Well, you're correct in your assessment.
Thank you.
What I will add to that, if the whole LGBT thing came about from insecurity.
Yes.
The continual militant ways they go about this stuff is because they're insecure in who they are. Because everyone innately knows they're wrong.
Yes.
They'll argue that point though. Anybody who thinks they're not that they'll argue that but really something in that way down, because I mean, everybody has a consciousness that is formed and God has instilled his knowledge in there.
Well, but I mean, just to kind of further lessen the impact of it, I think anyone who's sinning and wants to justify the pleasure of the sin is going to argue even when they know they're wrong. So, I mean, there's murderers that argue they were perfectly justified in murdering 50 people.
But I'm just saying, right? If you have a biblical perspective, then you understand that it's, And Paul says this in Romans that, actually not even just Paul, he points back to David. And it's kind of both in Old and New Testament where they point out, they say, hey, look, everybody's instilled with the knowledge of God's existence and who he is. And he's there.
Everyone has the God-shaped hole.
That's it. So, I mean, it's an insecurity brought on that. And people are going to be upset about me saying that or whatever. I really don't care.
Well, but it feeds into the other point that you sent me. This whole pandemic of acceptance, right? Love thy neighbor versus love the behavior, right? My grandparents loved me even when I did things wrong. They didn't approve of the things I did wrong, but they still loved me. I can love you and know that you're making a mistake and want to try to help you turn away from that mistake. Just because you enact in a behavior that is aberrant doesn't mean I just need to accept the behavior because it's you.
Okay. Let me say this. The reason why you see, you don't see anybody saying from their side that though, okay? You won't hear anybody echoing what the Christian says, that we don't hate you. We just don't approve of
you. Well, but is that necessarily a Christian?
No. Hold on. I'm not.
Mm-mm. Okay. All right.
So it's not necessarily a Christian thing. No, but what I'm saying is that they won't use the same vernacular as we do for this scenario.
Yes. That's agreed.
Okay. What they'll do is they'll say, well, you hate. They'll use the word hate instead of disapprovement or not agreeing or not accepting or whatever the case may be. They don't ever use those words. They use hate.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah, because they want to instigate a reaction.
They want to force an acceptance.
And I just want to, let me say something about that too. I try the best I can not to hate anything. And the reason I do that is because, yeah, I shouldn't, but it also takes a ton of energy to hate something. To harbor hate is exhausting. Like, it's exhausting.
Yes, it is.
And I don't think we were built for it, honestly. I don't think God built us to do that, right? Like, he definitely built us to know what sin is and to be turned away from sin, but he never raised us to hate anyone, right?
No, but my frustration comes from this. When you get into June, every year you see a resurgence of all these memes and posts and everything where they say, no matter who you love, there's no hate here. You're welcome here. There's a safe space here. All this kind of stuff.
No, there isn't.
That is the constant thing I see. Yeah. And it's like, it really using the language there is on purpose. And this is what I think people don't understand, even from a Christian stand, because you see this from Christians too. They'll post the same thing. Don't matter who you love or whatever, but they're echoing language that was created for division.
Yeah.
And it's not the right language associated with biblical truth. Yet, no, I don't care who you love or whatever you are. I'm still going to, I still think you're valuable.
Yeah.
Your value isn't based on who you're messing around with. That doesn't mean, though, I have to agree that your lifestyle is according to what God intended.
Well, and I also think there's a lie being sold in there. And the lie that's being sold in there is that God and Jesus love the sinner, hate the sin. That's actually not true.
That's not true at all.
God hates sins and sinners. He can't be in the presence of it. If you go into, I mean, you can literally run through, you know, Psalm 5:4, Isaiah 6:3, Revelation 4:8. It talks about in those books, God cannot be in the presence of sin. He is so revulsed by it. That is why his son was sacrificed. That doesn't mean God doesn't love you, but he can hate your sin, and he does not look kindly on habitual sinners, right? Like people who are just rolling in their sin. So yes, that Jesus came and loved the sinner and hated the sin, but that wasn't God. So that lie needs to be taken off the table, because I know a lot of churches who like to say, well, God loves you regardless of your sin. You probably aren't reading your Bible. Now, Jesus was brought here to save us. He was sacrificed to save us. So yes, he loved the sinner and he hated the sin, but that wasn't the Father.
They're all concurrent.
Yeah, for sure.
Consistent, right? Yeah. So here's the thing. It's not so much, and it's the wrong, see, this is, it's actually the wrong way to even approach that whole thing about hate and love and everything else.
Yeah.
I don't even think that's the right way to look at that whole thing. God sees everyone that he's knitted together as a creation that he's made in his image.
Yeah.
He has a purpose for every single person he's created.
Yes.
And he's put on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
He values every single person on this earth. Mm-hmm. He understood, like, there's intention behind you having free will to come to him on your own without being coerced or made to as a slave or whatever. There's a reason for that.
And that's the trick. He could have built us all to worship him.
Yeah.
And gave us no, we could have lived our entire existence with no idea that there was anything else.
So that's the thing. Like, whatever sin you're committing is like, it's repulsive because it's the antithesis of what really, how God exists and who mm-hmm. he exists in. Just like, you know, if he, like, just think about it. If the God of the universe that created everything and all things and the laws and everything in the universe were to contradict himself, it would undo existence probably because it can't happen. I mean,
to believe in God, to believe that God is infallible. Well, if you believe that God can make mistakes, then he ain't God.
No, then everything else is a joke and there's no real purpose and everything else. And that's even more ridiculous than an atheist standpoint, really.
Well, so, you know, and the reason I feel that way is not because I've read a book. The reason I feel that way is I know who I am. I know all the things I've done. I know the things I've been through. I know the things I've survived. I know my path in life.
Yeah.
And I believe in the God of the Bible. I don't necessarily believe in a lot of the church's representation of God because they're softening God to get more people to come in. And they're preaching this message of, you know, peace, love, peace and chicken grease.
No, I mean, there's a proper way and a wrong way.
Yeah. Right? And there's this atypical way that people have learned to communicate about God that it's false. And I think that the only way the devil can't create anything, he doesn't have the power to do so. He can only corrupt the things that God creates. And I think that's what you're seeing happening with the again, this overflow of Pride Month, the memes, the flags, the cars with the flags, all that stuff. You're flying a message of anti-Christianity in the only way that you feel powerful enough to do it. And unfortunately, it just is. It's a weightless message.
Really is. I'm just saying that pride, even the actual definition of pride is apropos. I would say, because that's really not what somebody should be trying to.
Well, it's a cardinal achieve. Sin. Pride, avarice. It's a cardinal sin.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like that whole thing is just a. It's just so silly.
And if anything, look at the aftermath. You know, I've spoke to, and I've told you about some of the stories I've went in the conversations I've had with people, but I firsthand have seen what choosing these things does to families. You know, I've seen families, you know, one of the other parents decides to become whatever, homosexual, lesbian, whatever it is, transgender, pick it. And they destroy their kid's life. They destroy their relationship with their children. And what's worse is they see the devastation that these relationships and changes are enacting, and they're choosing to continue to enact them regardless of the loss.
Well, they shift the blame from themselves to the environment, saying you're just not accepting of this.
Which, no.
This is my true self kind of nonsense. This is who I really am kind of stuff.
Yeah, but
it's an identity crisis. So
by that means, every time a kid dresses up for Halloween, you are a clown. For the rest of your life, you're a clown.
Well,
you're a werewolf. No, you're just a person in a costume who's really, really, really trying to play the role, but you're never actually going to succeed. And I'll be honest with you, and I've said this before, I still am waiting for the epic backlash that should be coming from real women and real men. And the reason I say that is, how dare you? How dare you jump into a situation and say, I'm going to be a woman? You haven't been through 100 years of what women have been through. You haven't done any of the things that helped the cause of whatever women may have been fighting for at that point. You just co-opted it and you're using it as a very nice costume. And look, it's the same thing with men or women. You're going to turn into a guy? No, you don't know half of what we go through in a day. You don't know half of what men face.
No, so I mean, but look, the thing is, it's just preposterous. And I think it's absurd. And I think it's insulting. It's not that I have anything really against anyone who is struggling with that type of thing.
No.
But I don't accept that as a morally good character trait.
Can I ask you a question? And this is a legitimate question that I came up with.
Compared to illegitimate?
Well, fair enough. Okay, so you're a person who's struggling with, let's say, transgender. You're struggling with it.
Okay.
And then there's the person over here who's doesn't seem to be struggling with it, seems to be, you know, owning it. I empathize with the person that's struggling. You something's wrong and you're fighting your inner spirit is fighting against it, so it's causing problems in you that are manifesting in certain behaviors. The one that is completely accepting of this break in their psyche, in their spirit, in their mentality, and they are bathing in it. How do we, you know, and I'm sure other people would wonder this, how do we treat those situations differently, right? Like I know people who are, you know, they're just full on, I'm a chick, even okay. though I wasn't born a chick, and I'm going to own it, and I'm going to wear dresses, and I'm going to put makeup on, and nobody's going to stop me, and I am who I am. And then there's people that I know that it is a legitimate mental, emotional, spiritual struggle that they're in, and they don't, and they're recognizing that even though it seems like an alternative, it still doesn't seem like the right alternative, right?
Okay. Psychology has been hijacked by this idea. Understand that there's been decades of research into this type of thing that have been respected and dutifully done to say how to treat and how to recognize and all this stuff about these type of scenarios. So there's that, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole, there's really not therapy for it anymore, just to say, well, okay, if you believe that, then you are.
Yeah.
Which doesn't, that matter of fact, that doesn't solve anything, makes it worse. So the whole Marxist idealism has corrupted psychology in that manner already. Okay. So there's that, right? Yeah. You have therapy that you can't even get really unless you
illegitimate know, therapy is what it is.
Yeah, it's bonkers. But you used to be able to.
Yes.
The second thing is, What I imagine a question would be this: why did God create me this way? So there's that. Now I can answer this question. It's very simple. God creates everyone with all. I mean, I'll say this: we're products of the fall.
Yeah, we're born. We're born of sin.
We're products of the fall. When the fall happened, that wasn't just a. Now you can die. It's a radical corruption of our everything, even down to probably the DNA. Now I'm just saying that, you know, it's a corrupted thing. So we're living in a post fall existence where things are not the way that they were intended to be. That goes to even why there's alcoholism versus why there's people who have propensity to be a psychopath or who all these kind of, there's all these kind of things that happen that people are, that deal with. Everyone has something that they deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone does. No one is just going through life without any kind of
depression,
whatever it may be,
you know, all kinds of things.
And in your level of, you can stack those up all you want, but that's only your perception because you don't have any idea what that other person is going through or how deep that rabbit hole goes for them. Some, you know, for me, like I don't struggle with anxiety or depression. It's hard for me to empathize with people who do because I have no idea why that would, you know, how you could be doing that. Like, why don't you just do this or whatever? But I know scientifically that there is all these things that can lead to that. And it can go really, really, really down this road that mm-hmm. I have no idea about. So I can't presume to say my struggle is worse than theirs. When yes,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So the idea here is that, look, there are ways, and there's still really legitimate counseling and all that kind of stuff that can be done for people who have this kind of scenario. It's not something to be celebrated, especially not even over a freaking month. It's something that needs to be treated. Now, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people who are going to be riled up about all that. But the fact is that from the biblical standpoint, if you are a true Christ follower, you're not going to be nasty to
anyone,
even, no, regardless of who they are, what they've done. And you're certainly not going to, it's not up to you to judge where they go when they die. That's the one thing, but we can say, look, that behavior is not godly. Yeah. You can, as a Christian, you can judge that. That doesn't mean, though, if I say someone's activity they just did is ungodly, that doesn't mean I'm saying I hate you.
Well, that also doesn't mean if you show up on my front porch with your kids and you don't have any food that I'm not going to feed you.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not that. And here's the thing I think is most misunderstood about me. And I told you, Reggie, I've kind of gone on a little rampage of getting people to watch the show and talk to them. And I've had a lot of positive feedback and I've had a lot of negative feedback. But the thing I want people to know about us is we are men. We are Christians. That means we have a mission. That means we are to show God's love, God's kindness.
Yep.
We are to say, hey, regardless of your sin, regardless of what's going on, we're going to love you. We may not approve, but it's still our job to love you and show the love of Christ through our actions, right? That's our job. That's why, you know, we make the choices we make, right? Like, we don't, I don't understand this whole, and I will say this, and it sounds really bizarre when I say this, but any group that wants to get away with something aberrant attacks Christianity first. Because what they want to do is delegitimize the very argument against the thing they're doing.
Yes.
And it's never delegitimizing us with any proof, with any, you know, facts, anything like that. It's just like you said, it's, well, they hate us. I don't hate nobody.
Okay. But let me say this. If you're okay. So here's a great example. I won't trust you with certain things, though. If you're living a lifestyle that's blatantly counter to what, that could be all kinds of things.
Yeah, okay? It could be drugs. It could be
whatever it is.
Do you be criminal there's, behavior?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm. There's a level of trust there. You won't have from me.
I'll give you a great example. My neighbor, I've told you about the whole black house thing going on. My neighbor, if you want to call him a neighbor. There's drugs. There's all kinds of things involved going on in that house. Showed up at my house the other day. It was really funny. My youngest boy came in and said, Dad, our neighbor's outside. He won't come past the no trespassing. So he knew better than to cross that line. And he had two empty jugs in his hand. They don't have any running water. They don't have any electricity. And he asked me, he says, man, I could really use some water. Sure do. So just hang on. I'll go get you some water. I went and got him 2 gallons of water. I hope I even said, I said, God bless you, brother. I hope everything's works and it works out for you. And if he showed up tomorrow and said, man, I got lunch meat and no bread. I'll give you a loaf of bread. I will not watch a man starve. I will not watch a woman starve. But would I let you watch my kids? No, dude, you're on drugs. Would I let you, you know, borrow my car? No, dude, you're on drugs. Like, you're going to sell my car likely, and it's not going to happen, dude.
Yeah.
So you're right. There are things I'm not going to trust you with. I'm going to love you in the ways that are okay. And I'm going to love you in ways that are safe. for me and my family and for the community. But yeah, you're right. There's certain things I just think.
Well, and too, there's a lot of energy it takes to like, if you're hanging out with somebody who's going through some stuff, man, there's a lot of energy that it takes to like be able to, I don't know what you want to say, confront that or do that kind of thing, man. I mean, there is, and sometimes you just don't have it. Yeah. I mean, so there is that. I mean, I've been in several situations where it was just like, there, you know, you just like, look, dude, I know you need something right now. I can't, there's just, no, it ain't going to work.
Well, but here's another thing too. And I think this is a truism, man. And I live, especially the last 3 or 4 years, I've really lived by this. And this is that if I'm pouring into you and you're not pouring into me, and it doesn't have to be equally, but you just have to make an effort. Eventually, the relationship will become such a weight that I'm just going to have to halt things for a while until you figure this out.
I guess
out.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, yeah. the it's like you, if someone's legitimately wanting your help,
yeah,
and you continually try to do that, but it's a continual thing, and yeah. it's always, then, you know, eventually you got to say enough's enough.
Yeah.
That could be with anything though, but okay. Anyway, get back back on track.
Yes.
Just to look, it's ridiculous, and I think it's offensive, and I don't appreciate it. But at the same token, I understand why it exists. I know the intention behind it. There's no wool pulled over my eyes as far as that stuff goes, and I think that's the whole point. Is that, you know, there are people like. There are, it's not like this, I don't even think it's a minority anymore. I think it's almost, I wouldn't even call it that. It's not a majority, but maybe it's definitely not a minority that say, this is all dumb.
Yeah.
I don't want a white history month. I don't want a straight heterosexual
male month.
I don't want a man. Hell, even Father's Day, I'm kind of like, man, why are we even doing that? Right. I got crap to do. I don't need another holiday to. But yeah. I'm just saying, like, celebrate people. Yes. But you don't, I mean, that's the thing. Encourage people to celebrate other people all the time. Yeah. Not just on one day of the year.
Yeah.
One month of the year.
I mean, I'm all about celebrating differences. But there are some differences that are just not, they're not differences. They're cries for help, in my opinion.
And I think, I mean, really, I would say, in general, the LGBT thing just sounds like a cult to me.
Lovely segue, Reggie. Lovely segue. I'm so passionate about this subject. We're going on to the main subject, guys, and the main subject today is cults. I have watched about umpteen documentaries about David Koresh, about Jim Jones, about Nexium, about the cult of politics, right?
See, I just don't look. So for, I know this is like, you're into this stuff. I just am not. I really don't care.
Well, and the reason I'm into this too is I really empathize with people who choose to follow a man in the sense of, you know, in the sense of a man who is, you know, faulted and, you know, I mean, just to kind of give you an example, let's talk about the six major, personality aspects of a cult leader. I mean, number one is cult leaders are malignant narcissists because they so much want to be the head and leader that they will lie and tell you anything. They will manipulate you. They will tell you anything, gaslight you, whatever they can do. They are extraordinarily unpredictable. Which means they can change the beliefs of whatever they're selling you at any given time in order to gain more power. Right. They have insecure attachment issues. That's why they don't want to let you go. They're very insecure. So your attachment to them gives them, you know, power and gives them security. They're extraordinarily delusional. We'll take Jim Jones as a great example. Jim Jones, Jonestown, one of the most famous cults ever made. Jim Jones was so delusional that he went from being a preacher to believing he was Jesus. Then there is a sense of extreme personal grandiosity. They think that in some way they are invincible or they are all powerful, this grandiose view of who they are. And it's unlimited, right? It's an unlimited view. Like there's never a vulnerability.
Do you remember the show Stargate, right?
Yeah.
I always think of cults when I think of Stargate because it has the symbiotes or whatever. I forgot what episode it was, but he ended up coming back to Earth and one of them was a cult leader.
Yeah.
And it, cause he, obviously they always thought they were gods anyway.
Yep.
You know, and every time I think of cult, I just think of the Stargate dude. And that's the only thing I kind of pop in my head.
Well, and the last trait I want to talk about is they're extraordinarily exploitative. They're extraordinarily exploitative. They will exploit your fears, your weaknesses. And the way they do this is something, you know, that I love to talk to people about is there are four stages of cult indoctrination. And those kind of feed into the cult leader thing. The first stage is what they call softening. What they'll do is prep you for a message. Now, what they'll do is they'll ask you to do extraordinarily physically difficult things for days on end. They'll make you stay awake for 48, 72 hours. And they soften your mind and they soften up your shield and then make you, you know, open for whatever the crazy message might be. Cause if you've been awake for 72 hours and you ain't had any sleep, if I said I was Jesus for a second, you might go, well, maybe he is cause he won't let me go to sleep. You know, there's this really softening that goes on and, you know, then there's what they call the compliancy demand stage, which is member demands. You're all of a sudden you have a role in a cult. If you've only been in a cult for a week and all of a sudden you got a role in the cult, could be financial, could be, well, you're going to be our number one fundraiser. You're going to be our number one recruiter. Well, all of a sudden you feel important. Well, man, they must see something in me that makes him want to push me up the leadership ladder in this cult or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what they would call it. And then you have what they call the internalization stage, mm-hmm. which is gaining agreement and relationship severing. So what they do is they get you to agree that everything that they're saying is true. And then they convince you that all of the people that would be able to feed normal information into your life are the enemy. So you begin severing relationships. This is very common in Scientology. When you start, erasing people out of your life because they don't agree with what you believe. Yeah. Which is a cult, by the way. And it's obstacle removal, right? And then it's consolidation, engaging in personal and financial acts. When you give large amounts of money or you give large amounts of anything to a cult, let's take a great example would be David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. He required them to give everything that they had. When you have nothing, it's hard to walk away.
Yeah, you're totally dependent.
Yeah, so you become inert on what they're doing, right? So there's this dangerous, level of they've taken everything I have, right? So I have nothing left, so I have to stay because I don't have anywhere else to go. It's almost a feeling of hopelessness at that point, right? It's very clever and, you know, some statistics that are very well, or I thought
were well, very shocking. Before you get into that,
yeah.
You haven't defined a cult yet.
Oh, well, I'm getting ready to. Well, there's two definitions I'll give you to a cult. I'm going to give you the biblical definition to a cult and I'm going to give you the Webster's definition to a cult.
Okay.
The religious or the biblical definition of a cult is any perversion of the gospel based on a unholy devotion to a person or principle. That is essentially what the Bible defines as a cult. The Webster's definition of a cult is a religious, political, or sex group based on the devotion to one person or principle. So they're kind of eerily the same a little bit. and is their definition, but any perversion of the gospel. Well, we can go into
all what kinds
the
Bible of
says.
There was
all kinds of things.
Further definition I found, I think I like better, really. A cult is a group of or movement with a shared commitment to a usually extreme ideology that is usually embodied in a charismatic leader.
Yeah.
And also, too, that they provide meaning, purpose, belonging, offer a clear, confident vision, and assert the superiority of the group. Right. Yeah,
for sure.
So, but there's two things I want to add to this whole definition real quick, though. It's very much like an abusive relationship. If you ever known like someone who is in a husband or a wife who was like controlled everything, took everything, did all that. It's very, 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 it is cultish behavior, if you want to put it that
absolutely
way, like that. And also too, a gang is very similar to a cult.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the way that it is, you go in here, this is your family now. This you get is,
jumped you know, in or,
you know, you have to do these things, blah, blah, yeah, blah. For sure. You know, if you leave, you're, it's not just a free kind of, you can come and go as you want either kind of thing. So I think that's worth pointing out as well.
Yeah. Well, you got, some other kind of freaky statistics are there are 10,000 active cults that we know of currently in the U.S. Worldwide, there is right around 16,000, including the U.S., which is another statistics where I feel like the U.S. needs to really kind of look at, you know, we don't seem to be winning in the statistics categories tonight, but, you know, and that only includes the ones that are known. There are estimations that there are as many as 12 to 15,000 currently ongoing cults that are on under the radar that nobody knows about.
Okay, but let me ask you this, Brian. Is a cult always bad?
You know, dude, that is a very good question that I kind of ran across in my studies. Well, in Acts 15:1-31, it talks about things like the Pharisees and the Judaizers as cults within the Bible. But
it depends on how you define it.
It depends on how you define it. And it depends on a cult of what. Like, the word cult has multiple uses. So, you know.
Well, I think it's defined negatively in modern times. Okay, yes, so is. I think that's important to kind of understand here. That when you look at, like, you know, the definitions and stuff or the psychology research mm-hmm. and all that stuff in occults, it's all negative. There's not anything yeah. positive about. There's some parts of a cult that they say that's not necessarily bad. But as general, though, the cult is defined as a negative thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But there have been other types of, I guess you'd say types of cults. I don't know, throughout history that weren't so terrible. Maybe.
Example.
Yeah.
Example.
I don't have an example because I was actually trying to find it, but there's really not.
Well, there's four major categories of cults.
Because people have, well, here, let me say this. I'm sorry, Brian.
Okay.
People have said, like, they labeled their group as a cult of something or other.
Yeah.
And that necessarily weren't necessarily bad or they didn't follow the prescribed modern definitions of
cult.
Can't lose, you know, just tyrannical, blah, blah, blah. So I would say our modern definition strays from maybe sometimes what people like to or have labeled their associations or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's four well-known categories for cults, and one of these is super interesting. The first one is doomsday cults, i.e. David Koresh. World's coming to an end. Everything's going to blow up and burn down. Yep. I'm Jesus. I'm the only one that can save you.
Yep.
Then there are religious cults, i.e. Jim Jones. You know, Koresh was weird because he was sort of a mix between the two because he believed he was Jesus, believed he was the second coming of Jesus. Then there are political cults. This is the one that interests me. Political cults, and there's a definition is extreme right or left. Those are considered cults because of their behaviors. Lies or truth, we're going to believe it. We're going to push it through. We're going to try to get other people to believe it, right? I have heard, and this is not just the political left, this is the political right. I have heard just out and out lies.
Sure.
And I'm like, dude, but they are so inertly inserted into that lie that they believe it. And then there are sex cults, which would be like Nexium, which weirdly is spelled N-V-I-X-M, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, but I'm cool. You know, and those are all sort of parts of, I mean, I guess the reason I want to talk about this is I've had a few interactions with people who are former cult members. And I see the rolling impact that being in cults had on their life and is still having on their life to this day, right? Like their lack of confidence, their lack of willingness to trust. I mean, it destroys to be in this thing where your freedom is taken. You can't, you know, you can't have anything for yourself. You're required to give everything you have. You have no security. And then, you know, a lot of cults just naturally come to the end because the cult leader himself just becomes in his mind bigger than the cult. And he just abandons ship or she, whoever. There's so many. Like I could get into some of the cults that I've read about and documented, and some are very well known and some are not. But people need to be aware that this is another aberrant influence out there in the world that is trying to take you off your spiritual axis.
Well, yeah.
Right. And it says here, and I found this, which I thought was very interesting, is that cults tend to target people with no spiritual identity. That is actually one of the top five traits that cult leaders target. If you have any spiritual confidence, they avoid you like the plague because they don't want you to be able to combat them with any facts or any truths. They need you to have zero spiritual center so that they can turn, so that they can become your spiritual center. Right. So
that does bring up a question.
Yeah.
Do you really join a cult or you're indoctrinated in it?
I think that those words are mushed together when it comes to how you become a member of a cult, because there is a joining ceremony in most cults, but it's really just you're already indoctrinated, and it's just you kind of saying the thing that you're already convinced you believe. Right. And I have had somebody jump up and go, well, aren't Christians a cult? No. And here's why. Number one, we can leave whenever we want. It's our choice. We don't, there is nothing in the Bible that says I have to follow God. There's nobody in my church that, you know, comes and puts rattlesnakes in my mailbox or tries to kidnap me and bring me back. I mean, I have the freedom of choice. God grants me the ability to choose. So I don't have to go and, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about what I believe is I'm not required to do anything other than,
but
you know,
let me say this. There are some Christian organizations that are cults.
Yes, they are. Yes, there are. That is absolutely true. There are some, because again, one of the things is the Christian definition of a cult is anything that is against the gospel. And there are a lot of churches out there that are Christian by their name and their sign on the front of the building, but what they're preaching in church is not gospel.
Yeah, there's been when we church hopped a little bit to find something.
Church hopping.
Yeah, no, we found a couple cults. It was funny. Very weird, very not cool, did not want to be there kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean they're more prevalent, I would say, than what you would think.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that comes from when the church tradition takes over the church mission. Do you see what I'm saying? Well, like we want these traditions to be why you show up. We want you to show up, you know, in a 3-piece suit. We want you to show up and you can only sing these hymns because we think these are the only good ones. And when you start enacting rules and that are not in the Bible, then you're becoming an aberrant influence on somebody, because you and I both know, Reggie, going through life, we have learned more about our spirituality through our journey. And one of the things that I've learned is God can hit you in so many different ways and from so many different angles. And there's nothing that happens in my life that he doesn't use in a way to either better me, teach me, or prosper me.
Yeah.
You know,
there's just a lot of things that I think, because there's cults, there's cultish behavior, there's something like that. And I think there is an overarching, like, for the religious sect of any, well, all kinds of religions really can fall into this cultish thing when there's people that usurp God.
Yeah.
That's really what happens, man. You know, whether it's Egyptians or whether it's, you know, the Babylonians or Persians or looking back on history, there's lots of examples of that kind of thing. But I would say though that when I was looking at a couple, there was a couple of TEDx talks that were talking that had cult survivors and all that kind of stuff. And I watched a couple of those, I think about like women who have been kind of controlled and like abused in that way to where their husband's just like that. Like I've seen this in real life.
Yeah. Okay? So have I.
And it's the very similar to that where they say, well, it was really good at first. Like they're, you know, thought this was all great and everything, but then gradually like this controlling kind of entity is like,
and it's the same thing. You cut them off from their family. Yeah. You can't take everything from them. You know, completely take their independence away.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's very similar.
But so there is some other, what I found though too, was like vulnerabilities to the individual vulnerabilities. Like you mentioned a couple of them, high hypnotic ability. Yeah. Whatever it is. A strong ability for concentration and a vivid imagination, learning disorders, autism spectrum disorders, excessive use of hypnosis, meditation and other activities can induce an altered state of consciousness that allows you to be. So they'll do these things and the rituals to do that kind of stuff. Okay. So
for sure.
I just want to point that out. If they're having the kind of stuff, there's other risks. If you have any kind of learning or communication disorder, if you're into drugs or alcohol, that's another problem. If you've unresolved trauma or anything like that, or because those things are open wounds at that point, if they're unresolved, it's really easy to kind of,
And if you have no spiritual center, then it's really easy to break down.
And even really recently is like, even the pandemic and stuff has affected some people in that way.
Well, I mean, think about it. It was a cult of personality. I mean, 30% of Americans couldn't wait to rat on anyone that they knew that didn't have the so-called vaccine.
So, right? So here's, since you said that, I will say this, I talk to people all the time to say, how did Germany allow that stuff to happen? We saw how that can happen in our own freaking country.
Yeah.
Ridiculous, dude. Anyway,
and now the utter, you know, nonsense that's come of it and the truths that have come out, which are exactly opposite, but as important as any of it, you know, there's four ways to help a family member or a friend escape a cult. And I thought these were reasonable. One is to continue to maintain positive contact. And what they mean by that is even if that relative, friend, wife, husband, brother, sister have cut off contact with you, continue to reach out, continue to send letters, continue to do all the things that you can do to remind them of the emotional connections that they had in their life. Right.
Yep.
The other is don't shame or belittle them. Right. Because that's just going to entrench them deeper. Right. Speak to them like you would speak to any other adult. Right. Talk to them, be kind to them, love them. The fourth one is be curious and research the beliefs, because your best weapon is knowing the falsehoods of the belief and being able to shine lights on the things that are not feasible. Right. Like,
yeah.
he's a guru. Well, you really can't argue with that because that's such a loose term. But if it's, well, he's a guru and he can fly.
Well, look,
you know, there's ways to have those discussions against the things that are impossible.
I would say before you join any kind of association or group or something, you always got to do some due diligence there.
Yeah. I mean, well, but you got to realize too, that where the people that they're going after are not going to be the people that are probably going to be doing due diligence. You know what I'm saying?
So how can one better understand if they, like, let's say someone gets in a situation, how can they understand they're in a cult? Like what kind of things can they look for to kind of help them see if they're in a cult?
Well, I would say, look for the proof in the pudding, right? For example, let's take, the Hale Bopp comic guy. I can't remember his name, but the one that made everybody castrate themselves. And when he tells you, I am from another place and I'm here to enlighten you, ask him how he got here. Ask him ask him if you can visit. You know, make him tell you, you know, one of the things that I tell people all the time is look for the kernel of truth in the pile of poo, for not wanting to say the other part of it.
Isn't that the same guy who said there was, the ship was like behind the comet?
Well, he said his ship was behind the Hale Bopp comet and it was going to come and rescue
them. Which was actually scientific, like it's impossible.
But he had a room full of people that believed him.
I know that.
And that literally took all the drugs and died. And
yeah, nothing, they were dead.
Yeah. Then nothing happened.
So according to the Cult Education Institute, yeah, I found that, by the way,
the Cult Education Institute, the CEI.
Here's some warning signs to look for, right? Absolute authoritarianism without accountability.
Yep.
Zero tolerance for criticism or questions. Lack of meaningful financial disclosure regarding budget, which most of these things are people trying to get some money in.
Yeah.
Unreasonable fears about the outside world that often involve evil conspiracies and persecutions.
Yes.
However, that one is a little different, I think, nowadays, because there's like most of our conspiracy theories are proving correct every day. Yeah,
that used to be a lot of people, and now a lot of people are making a lot of sense, right? So
a belief that former followers are always wrong for leaving, and there is never a legitimate reason for anyone else to leave.
Yeah.
Abuse of members, records, books, articles, or programs documenting the abuses of the leader or the group. There's some of that around, like the Nevium survivor chick.
The Nexium.
Nexium, whatever it is. She had all this stuff that she was eventually found all that, you know, turned them in. Followers feeling they are never able to be good enough because, you know, you're always pushed down. A belief that the leader is right all the time. A belief that the leader is the exclusive means of knowing truth or giving validation. Right?
Yes.
So, I mean, look, this is one of these things where this is why I did my research where I did, because I find it really, how would one even get to the point where they're doing this stuff? But in this, was really around like what's the psychology around it? How one would get into that space, or how could they get in that space to follow these people, you know? That just is bizarre to me, right? But at the same token, the research I did said no one is excluded from being, you know, it can happen to anybody because everybody's got buttons that can be pushed. Yeah. So there's that. The thing about Jim Jones is when they did the whole Kool-Aid, because that's where we get to drink the Kool-Aid thing. That's where it comes from.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, those people were at gunpoint. It wasn't like they really didn't have a choice.
Actually, if you watch the documentary and they talk to some of the survivors, most of them drank it without hesitation. There were a few of them,
yes,
that when the time came, they were like, I want to drink the Kool-Aid and die. But the majority of them
just did it.
Just were like, hey, Jim says do it, we're going to do it. And they drank it.
Now, the thing is, too, what I wonder about characters like Jim Jones or whatever, I would have just liked to have had a conversation with the dude to see, like, how he could be so persuasive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's like, that's got to be at another level kind of way they communicate or something.
Well, yeah. Right? And it's just like Charles Manson. The Manson family was a cult. Think about it. You saw the interview in prison with Charles Manson. That dude was just a whack job, like of epic proportions, yet he convinced a group of people to murder for him.
Yeah. David Koresh. Now I did see some stuff with him and I'm like, you can see how it's like a really gifted speaker mixed with a charisma that comes around like with a certain energy and vibe or something. Right.
It's yes,
like
absolutely.
It's this strange thing that I think about like a person like that. What if they, if they just would have used that for the good?
Yeah.
You know, like,
the weird and twisted thing about that is in their mind,
they were. Yeah, they were. Yeah. Because they had these, it's just wires crossed somewhere.
Yeah. Something happened. And the weird thing about Jim Jones was he was a very well-known preacher before he flipped out. So what happened, bro? You knew the truth and then you took a crazy pill.
I don't know, man.
And lost it.
And, you know, who knows, man? What I would say a lot of this is demonic for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there's, and I know that, because that's how else do you really explain most of this stuff? But the modern Nexium thing is more very recent. Yeah. I mean, that's not that far
last ago. Year or two.
Right.
Maybe 3 years.
And I mean, so that's you. It's easy for us to say, well, that was 20 years ago. Things have changed since then. Now that was 50 years ago. Now that was like not that long
ago. But here's the thing. It's like a record on repeat. One huge cult comes in, levels the playing field with damage. There's a little bit of aftermath. Next huge cult comes in. Like it's a repeating cycle, right?
Yeah.
And some of them are still running. Some of them are dead.
Well, I know the one, what was the one? The Family International. That's still rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is that still around today? I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, who was the group? I can't remember. The Duggar family was involved with.
Oh, I don't remember that either.
But that was another example of, no, dude, that's not religion. That's cult behavior. For you to have one guy who's claims to be able to prophesy to everybody and knows everything. And dude, there's just dangerous people out there doing dangerous things. And I think that probably the worst ones are the ones who are trying to pervert the Bible to their own means. Well, I mean, if you think about it, prosperity gospel is a lot of cultish behavior and prosperity gospel. I mean,
Look, I'm going to really step on some people's toes, but Mormonism, cultish. It's not technically a cult because some of the things, but it's cultish.
Yeah. Well, that,
and it's, I am so done with people saying that's a Christian thing. No, you're not a Christian if you're a Mormon.
No,
their essential doctrine that is absolutely at the cornerstone of what Christianity really is concerning Jesus Christ. And if you don't believe in those things, you're not. That is absolutely false.
Yeah.
Mormons do not. And they wrote their own books about stuff. And this freaking Smith, I mean, come on, man. I mean, it's just retarded. How I shouldn't say that word either. I got to blip that out. it's just insane, man. How that's all been twisted by a man.
Yeah.
And his personal revelation that he wrote his own correcting thing. No. Very true. So anyway, there's several of these things. I know there's some, there are a lot of, I mean, not necessarily Christian, but other religious, like Buddhist and Taoist type of communities where it could seem like it's a cult, but it's not. There's the negative aspects where, like, you know, you where like you can't leave and all this stuff. It's you're borderline on that kind of stuff there, because there's some of those communities.
There is.
And I don't know, man. It's such a weird phenomena we have in humanity, dude. This innate sense of wanting to belong and like feeling a part of something, and that, and it's this like, and it doesn't even have to come from broken families. It comes from just I don't know, disenchanted people and stuff like that. And it ends up with you find yourself in a cult, and now all of a sudden you have nothing, and you're being asked to drink some Kool-Aid. It's just, I don't know, man. It's bizarre, dude.
Well, you know, I just feel bad for people who are that lost and that spiritually disoriented, right? That you're looking to fill the hole with that.
I know.
It's just shocking.
The thing is, there's truth. I mean, with anything else, for us, it's really easy. Does it align with the biblical narrative? Does it coincide with what Jesus taught? Does it make sense between the Old Testament and the New Testament? It's like those, the very same things we do to like interpret and understand the written word justifies groups and leaders and rules and laws and everything else that we do.
Yep.
It's well within our range of things we must do on a normal basis to maintain our Christ followership.
Yep.
Right. And so for us, it's really, and that's why they don't target some people like that, because there's no chance, because I would tear it to shreds.
I'm just going to pick you apart. Like I'm going to find the weakness, and we're just going to keep bending until it breaks. Right.
But
like,
I don't deny that there's probably a way for myself to get sucked into something.
Invincible.
No, I'm not. I mean, I can be persuaded of.
I've even been in churches where I thought I was doing the right thing, and I had to really kind of shake myself and be like, this isn't what we're supposed to be doing. Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's just, it's, and I, churches, dude, this is what I'm saying. Like, there's some churches very cultish. Avoid them like the, and this is what I'm saying. Take this list of things and you can apply it to a church.
Yeah.
Now, not all of them are going to be as blatant as what they say here about certain things.
Yep.
But, you know, I know one church I went to in 20 minutes, they talked about how giving, and it was not, it was, they were totally saying how it's not 10%, it's everything. This woman, they gave an example of this lady who, you know, she gave everything she had to the thing and was all this stuff. And it was very much a, you need to give us everything you have kind of sermon kind of stuff. And it's just the atmosphere. I don't know. It's, you get to be tuned into some of that stuff,
and I've recently visited a church where it was it was an end of days message, and it was very laced with, you better do everything you can now, give us everything you can now. And I was like, no, that's not how that works. Right. You're preaching a message to instill fear. And that's not, I mean, we should all have a healthy fear of God. Right. But you shouldn't encourage a Christian to walk through every day fearful. And that's just not okay.
No, right? I mean, because fear is not part. There's one fear that is a good fear, and that's a fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a good thing to be aware of. But all right, we are R&B Talks.
I want to say something real quick in honor of Men's Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
If there are any men that are watching this or catch this, and if you're struggling, I want to encourage you to reach out. And the reason I want to encourage you to reach out, whether it's to me and Reggie, we can see if we can find you resources, reach out to a neighbor, reach out to a friend. If you're struggling and you are having feelings of depression or anxiety that are causing you to think that maybe it's not worth moving on, trust me, the world's a better place with you than without you. Don't underestimate the hole you'll live in people's lives if you do something that is irreversible. And I pray every day for those kind of things to be addressed by God, and I hope that you all find the help you need. So yeah, we're R&B Talks.
See ya.
See ya.